This is station PCJ.
This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perrell.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome again to another edition of the program. Today is the first of a series of programs that we're going to be broadcasting right until June the 4th. Now, June the 4th is a day that many of you remember because it's the day that the incident took place in Tiananmen Square in 1989. This year is the 27th anniversary. Beginning today, and over the next few weeks, we're going to have a number of specials that will be looking at the media in China since 1989, and also some of the challenges that it faces. First, however, we're going to be putting a little bit of this into perspective. One of the stations that does broadcast to China on a daily basis, a number of hours a day, is Radio Free Asia. During the Cold War, along with the Voice of America, Radio Liberty provided its audience behind the Iron Curtain with news and information that was censored. It was not until the collapse of the Soviet Union and other communist regimes that stations like Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty really knew the size of its audience. In 1989, as Eastern Europe started to move towards democracy, the Far East was a different story. Oppressive governments in Vietnam, Burma, Cambodia, North Korea, and China continued to oppress their populations. But on June 4th, 1989, the world started paying closer attention to this part of the world, in particular China. June 4th, 1989 is a date people will remember as the day the communist authorities in China crushed the pro-democracy student movement. At the time, there were many foreign journalists in Beijing to cover the visit to China by Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev, but his visit was overshadowed. In May 1989, media restrictions in Beijing were lifted because of the visit, but then a few weeks later were tightened from what they had been. Just before they were tightened, even China's external service, Radio Beijing, reported on the tanks that entered Tiananmen Square.
This is Radio Beijing. Please remember June the 3rd, 1989. The most tragic event happened in the Chinese capital, Beijing. Thousands of people, most of them innocent civilians, were killed by fully armed soldiers when they forced their way into the city. Among the killed are our colleagues at Radio Beijing. The soldiers were riding on armored vehicles and used machine guns against thousands of local residents and students who tried to block their way. When the army convoys made a breakthrough, soldiers continued to spray their bullets indiscriminately at crowds in the street. Eyewitnesses say some armored vehicles even crushed foot soldiers who hesitated in front of the resisting civilians. Radio Beijing English Department deeply mourns those died in a tragic incident and appeals to all its listeners to join our protest for the gross violation of human rights and the most barbarous suppression of the people. Because of the abnormal situation here in Beijing, there is no other news we could bring you. We sincerely ask for your understanding and thank you for joining us at this most tragic moment.
It was at this time that a service to Asia came into being. Then a few years later, on March 12, 1996, Radio Free Asia was born. Radio Free Asia's mission is to broadcast news and information to listeners in Asia who are otherwise denied access to full and free information, and to provide a forum for the variety of opinions and voices from within Asia. RFA broadcast in 9 languages, the 2 largest language sections being Chinese and Tibetan. Andrew Janicek, Director of Program and Operations Support, explains how it was born.
Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, have been around for decades. Radio Free Asia has been around only since 1996. And what we tell people when they come to visit Radio Free Asia is we came about basically because of Tiananmen Square. In 1989, people that were living in China's own capital didn't even know what was going on down the street from them. In the United States, people like Congress were saying, we need to do something like a Radio Free Europe to help the people of China find out what's going on in their own inside their own borders. Legislation came up in 1994 and was approved for the creation of Radio Free Asia. And in September 1996, we went on with our first broadcast. And we've been doing it for over 15 years now.
I find it kind of extraordinary because in the 1970s, 1980s, China, for example, Vietnam, North Korea was under communism like the Soviet Union. Was that because U.S. foreign policy was different at the time that it is now, so there was less focus on the area, or was because the VOA was mainly covering it?
VOA has its own mission to broadcast to all of the world, really, and I think to promote the United States culture and our way of life. Our job at Radio Free Asia is different, and I think things are constantly changing. You know, everything from detente and when Nixon went into China, things have been changing since then, to the point that now China is favored nation status with the United States. But that doesn't mean that everybody has free access to news and information. So in the 90s, again, early 90s particularly, that was when the gears were working in the United States, at least, to put together Radio Free Asia. Again, based upon what we saw on TV coming out of China during the Tiananmen Square uprising, it was a shock to not just people in the United States, but people of the world to think, oh my gosh, this is going on someplace in the world. What can we do to help them? Radio Free Asia's job is really more focused than probably any of the major broadcasters you could think of. As a surrogate station, you know, we're there to provide a news and information for the people inside the country's borders. So, again, VOA being much broader in their scope met a need and meets a need, but Radio Free Asia has been established and is put in place to meet another more specific need within those countries. So the fact that they censor their media or control their media more is something that we in the United States don't really have to face. So in order to supplement and if nothing else, support the listeners in the country, Radio Free Asia is there to give them news of what's going on in and around them.
The day after the station went on the air, China's government mouthpiece, China Daily, ran an editorial with less than flattering words, as Jennifer Zhou, the Deputy Director of Programming, explains.
Well, actually, the day after Radio Free Asia went on the air, China Daily ran an editorial that pretty much said Radio Free Asia shut up. But in the 15 years that we have been on the air, the Chinese government has never been able to cite one specific example saying that Radio Free Asia got it wrong. They don't like what we say on the air because I know this sounds so... We report the truth, and they don't like what we are saying on the air, but they have not been able to pinpoint one report saying you got this fact wrong, you got that fact wrong. We go by the two-source rule. We verify every lead we get. A lot of the self-immolation stories that we were able to break, our listeners called us up and tipped us off, and then we were able to confirm the leads independently with other sources inside China. We have a extensive network of contacts inside China, which is one of the reasons why we have been able to break one story after another, not just the Tibetan stories, the Mandarin stories. In 2005, in December, I don't know if you remember the Little Tiananmen incident in Guangdong, Radio Free Asia's Mandarin service broke that story because our reporter had been talking to local villagers months ahead of time when we knew that they were angry about the construction of this power plant. And so when armed police moved in the evening of December the 5th in 2005, the villagers called our reporter on her cell phone and said that they're using real bullets on us. This is one reason we have extensive networks of people across all geographic regions inside China. Our listeners also, it's a gold mine of news tips. But we always go by the two-source rule. Sometimes we verify with multiple sources, not just two sources.
Now, when you have sources like that that are in China, in the back of your mind, you must be thinking sometime, I hope we're not putting any of these people in danger, because China does have a very vast security network. They're very good at observing people and watching people, even though, okay, they're not using a real name on the air, they can monitor a cell phone conversation, they can monitor an email. How and what do you do so this does not happen, so their safety and their family's safety is assured?
We distort their voices. A lot of times we post, if we are airing somebody with an exclusive lead, we would distort their voices and we would use a pseudonym, and we would tell our listeners this is a pseudonym and the voice has been distorted. We do our best to protect our sources, but it's really sad that we have not always been successful. I think 1997 or 1998, a labor leader in Hunan province, Zhang Shanguang, he was interviewed by one of our reporters, and we interviewed him about an NGO he was trying to form, how to fight for workers' rights and peasants' rights. During the interview, he said, by the way, as I speak, there are hundreds of peasants protesting downtown mm-hmm. at this location, and you should report it. So when we aired the interview, we did not report the part where he said there are these hundreds of people protesting, because we were not able to confirm it. We did not report it. But when he was arrested by Chinese police, eventually he was put on trial. In the official indictment, one of the charges against him was that he divulged information to Radio Free Asia about a labor unrest. How did they get that? They were monitoring his phone line. He got 10 years. When I got word that he had been sentenced to 10 years and that Radio Free Asia was mentioned in indictment, it was just before Christmas, and it was the saddest Christmas of my life. But we do try to protect people's identity. But then when you're dealing with a huge state police, it's really hard.
Radio Free Asia uses various platforms to distribute its programs, shortwave, internet, and satellite. One of the challenges for any international broadcaster is to know how many people are listening. This is even more challenging when you're targeting listeners in countries where information is censored, and you don't have the opportunity to go in and do an independent survey. So, how is this done? And how important is shortwave as a broadcast platform? Andrew Janicek again.
But we rely on a contract company to, and this is not just for Radio Free Asia, but for all of U.S. international broadcasting, a company that is, I think it's either contracted directly by the Broadcasting Board of Governors or the International Broadcasting Bureau. They do go out and they do surveys on site for listeners and try to get a best read as to how much they're listening to Radio Free Asia, to VOA, even probably others like BBC and Deutsche Welle too. And for example, if we use the North Korean example, again, impossible to get into North Korea. So they do travel to places like South Korea and find people that have been able to get out of country and are now living in the South and interview them about their experiences and their listening habits to shortwave radio. And there is the way we get our information about how successful or how unsuccessful we may be in our listening area.
When it comes to shortwave, up to how many frequencies would you have, let's say, on air at one time to, let's say, Vietnam or China?
I think it depends on maybe the amount of jamming we might face. For example, in Cambodia, there's no jamming known of for our shortwave frequency. So we may live off of one shortwave frequency for them and off of an affiliate in Phnom Penh, one FM frequency. But if you use the extreme like China, where they may be jamming us in Mandarin, again, there was one time where we had 1 hour of programming broadcast on 13 frequencies. I don't know that we'll see that much anymore, only because of the fact that budgets have forced us to cut back on the number of frequencies we've been broadcasting on. We're seeing that in our Vietnamese service, where we're jammed also. The more we put on, the more frequencies we use, the more likely we're able to get around jamming. The common sense statement on it is for every frequency you put up, we have to put up one to jam you. And in some cases, they may use multiples just to make sure that the jamming is really effective. So if we are not jammed and we're heard on one frequency, great. Low cost, not a problem. But if we are jammed and we need to fight that somehow, then it takes multiple frequencies. And multiple different frequencies serve different regions in different ways, too. One frequency may serve the northern part of China quite well, but not the south. And vice versa, another frequency is serving the south quite well, but not the north.
You are listening to Radio Free Asia.
自由亚洲电台开始播送普通话节目。
We're not listening for FM fidelity here. We're not listening for the latest Metallica hit to be in my headphones, but we're looking for news and information, and you as well as anybody else would know too. If there's a problem with the signal, after you've listened to it for 5-10 minutes, it's almost like the brain helps you tune that out, and you do pick up the information. Even in some of the worst signals that you can hear, even another radio station talking over the top of you, if you listen hard, again, your ear finally fine-tunes itself to hear the news and information. So I'm not there for the audio quality. I'm there for the news and information.
And I think that's very important, because in places like North Korea, Vietnam, China, it's the information, the content that is key. And if somebody really wants to know what's going on in their back door in China, the noise, they will put the noise aside.
Yeah. As I mentioned during the briefing, our service director from our Mandarin service said, you know, one of the things we don't have to worry about is necessarily promoting all of our frequencies. We do that as a service, and it's on our website, and most of our frequencies are listed there. But she also said, too, says, don't worry about putting it there, because no matter where you are, Radio Free Asia, we, our listeners, we will find you. So if they're motivated, they're going to come and find you anyways, even if they can't find their frequency. And you can only imagine the informal networks that are within certain towns and cities, whereas if Keith is listening to RFA on a certain frequency, well, then he tells AJ, AJ tells John, John tells Mary, and it goes on and on from there. So that way, within a short amount of time, our little network knows exactly where to go for the news and information we want.
Jennifer Joe and the rest of the staff at RFA feel pride in the work they do because of the difference they are making in people's lives. And when they hear about personal stories, their impact means even more.
I pride myself on the fact that every day we make a difference in people's lives, because we bring them news information that they cannot get elsewhere. The impact, a lot of times, when we talk about our impact, people think we're exaggerating, but we're not. A couple of years ago, we got a letter. The host of our investigative report feature program, he got a letter from a retired cadre. He was in his 80s. He was a high-level cadre. And he said he had a heart issue, and he wanted to get treatment at the best hospital in town. But his retirement pension would only allow him to go to a certain hospital. And he said, I had dedicated my entire life to this country, to the party, and this is how they're treating me. We interviewed him. We interviewed the supervisor with his former work unit. We aired the report. A week after we aired the report, his former work unit told him, okay, you can go get treatment at the hospital of your choice. But next time, just talk to us directly. Don't go to a foreign radio station. But this is the kind of impact that we are looking at. I know people will say, oh, it's anecdotal. It's just one little case. But really, there are dozens of cases like that in the 15 years we've been on the air. I know for a fact we are making a difference in people's lives.
That was the first of a series of programs that we will be looking at the media in China and the changes that have taken place since 1989, for the good and for the worst. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF to total journal.
Speed 220, Category 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Well, before we get to Glenn Hauser's propagation forecast, there's a couple of items that are of particular interest, actually, to, well, anybody who follows medium wave. First off, it seems that the Netherlands is planning to clear way to license low-powered medium wave stations. Now, in most of Europe, medium wave is virtually non-existent anymore, except for a few places. Most of the switch has been made to FM and DAB. Now, the Netherlands is considering giving the green light to low-power stations with an output of 1 to 100 watts. The interesting thing to find out is how many stations are actually planning on applying for it, because having FM and DAB in the Netherlands, of course, would be more acceptable. So, we'll have to wait and see when more on that comes across. Now, this is an interesting item. On May 1st, Radio Havana Cuba celebrated its 55th anniversary. Yes, it was 55 years ago, May 1st, that the station first went on the air. Arnaldo Coro, or Arnie Coro, host of DXers Unlimited, had a special program about the 55th anniversary. Now, somebody sent me a copy of the program, and I was also able to locate a copy of the script that he used on that program, which was transmitted on May 1st, 2016. Well, there was something very peculiar about it, because the script itself wasn't really anything new. Actually, it was from the 50th anniversary, and all the only thing that Koto did was replace the number 50 with 55 and a few other little changes. And essentially, it was the same script. Going back a little further, 5 years before that, to the 45th anniversary, well, I came across the exact same script, with the number 50 scratched out and 45 put in its place. Now, this is something that I have mentioned before. If you listen to DXers Unlimited on a regular basis, you will find that Coro does recycle shows. Not week after week, but after a few months, if you pay close attention, you will say to yourself, well, I've heard that before. Now, what is most interesting about this show that was done for the 55th anniversary, not just for his program, but also other Radio Havana Cuba programs, is never at any point did they do a documentary special looking at the complete history of the station. Now, you may think, well, this could be difficult because perhaps there aren't any clips. Well, this is actually untrue. Between the English and the French department at Radio Havana Cuba, there is a room. In the room are hundreds, if not thousands, of tapes dating back to the early broadcasts that took place in May 1961. And considering that Radio Havana Cuba is still using tape for the most part, well, it's actually quite easy to, you know, transfer some of the recordings. So it just begs me to wonder. For the 50th anniversary, they didn't do anything special. For the 55th anniversary, the same thing. All they did was issue a special QSO card. Now, I think it would be of more interest to actually have a documentary about the station, speak to some of the people that had worked at the station in the past, and find out what its future plans are. Well, future plans, that really depends on who you speak to, because it's been, of course, as we mentioned on the program before, estimated that within 5 years, Radio Havana Cuba will be gone, or will definitely be leaving shortwave due to the reestablishment of diplomatic relations between Cuba and the United States. Well, we will just have to wait and find out. And if during the 60th anniversary, if Coro does do the same thing, well, it's okay. You don't even have to re-record the show. Just record the number 60 and just edit it out and put it where 55 was and rebroadcast it again. All right, let's now turn our attention to what's been happening in the world of propagation this past week and what we can expect. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through May 7th. Normal at low latitudes, normal to fair at middle and high latitudes, with MUF depressions on May 7th. From Space Weather South Africa through May 7th, magnetic conditions quiet until unsettled on the 7th, shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. RSGB says a look at an HF propagation coverage map from VOA CAP online shows May generally sees the start of the summer doldrums, when maximum usable frequencies are generally lower during daylight hours, but remain higher at night. From Met Office UK, the four-day space weather forecast summary until May 9th. Solar activity expected to remain at low or very low levels, with none of the currently visible sunspots posing a significant risk of moderate class flares or R1 radio blackouts. On the 7th and 8th, geomagnetic activity is expected to become enhanced due to the influence of a coronal hole high-speed stream. Active intervals of K indices of 4 are likely, with a chance of isolated minor storms, K indices of 5 or G1 intervals. From Peter Coleman in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet on May 7th, 16th, and 17th, mostly quiet May 8th, 15th, and 22nd and 25th. Perhaps active to disturbed on May 9th and 10th, or quiet to active on May 9th to 11th, 14th, 19th, and 20th. Quiet to unsettled May 12th, 13th, 18th, and 21st. From SWPC in Boulder, G1 minor geomagnetic storms are likely on May 11th, with A and K indices of 25 and 5, and May 20th at 15 and 5. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on May 13th, and 15th to 18th. Solar flux dropping from 110 on May 8th to 82 by May 17th. Keep checking for sporadic E openings as low as 15 MHz. Strong signals from stations too close for normal reception, such as, for me, WWCR 15825 at 1 megameter distance. It can build up to 26, 60, 100 MHz or more for unpredictable openings, more likely in the afternoon and evening. William Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting from May 8th along the southwestern coast of Mexico, all week along the coasts of Angola and Namibia, and all around the Arabian Peninsula, and extremely extreme as far as India.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. We'll see you in 7 days' time. Until then, 73 and 88 to the ladies.